Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. This is Preem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Arvind. As always, we most humbly offer our loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. We are here to continue with the discussion that we started last week, which was again a discussion that we started a couple of weeks back in response to one of the mails that we got about doing a satsang on what is our understanding of who Swami really is. Is Swami an elevated master, a universal spiritual master, a yogi, or an avatar or divinity or God? If you've been with us in the past couple of episodes that we've been discussing on this matter, you'll know that we are not going to give you any answers for very good reasons. Swami is so beautifully explained to us, and it's also a way of explanation from Vedanta itself, that from the present state of understanding and comprehension that we all are in, there is no way we can understand or we can comprehensively conclude who Swami is. This is a process which is a two-way process. In trying to understand Swami, we gain better understanding of ourselves, and in trying to understand ourselves, we gain better understanding of Swami. So that is why this question and the effort to understand this, an answer to this question, is very much part of the spiritual journey itself. So we've been enjoying this, and primarily we've been going back to one particular discourse that Swami gave. We'll give you the reference of that discourse as we progress. We played a couple of clips, I think one clip from that last week. We're going to play a few more. But before we continue with where we stopped, let's ask Arvind to join all of us. Sairam, Arvind.
Sairam, Prem, and Sairam to all our listeners. You know, in Swami's Mahavakya on leadership, Swami speaks about the hierarchy which one must follow in order to ensure that you become a good leader, an ideal leader, so people listen to you and people follow you, people understand what you're telling. Mm-hmm. And that hierarchy is, I think we have done a satsang on this as well, is be, do, see, and tell. So in that hierarchy, telling comes at the fag end. It's actually being that is most important, and then doing, and then seeing the opportune moment, and then telling. Now, why I brought this up is because, interestingly, today's date, the 8th of March, coincides exactly to an episode that happened almost, say, 78 years ago, in which Swami showed us who Swami is by just being who He is. You know, we are discussing about this 1974 summer course discourse where Swami told us about who He is, but that is the telling part. But what is very significant is on this date, on this day exactly, the 8th of March, more than 70 years ago, as I said, Swami, by being who He is, gave an indication. This was possibly the earliest hint that Swami gave of His divinity and who He is. And I think it wouldn't be out of place to revisit that episode that happened on the 8th of March in 1940.
Absolutely, because it's a very significant date whenever we talk about the declaration that Swami made. And, you know, we are after all talking about trying to understand who Swami is. And one thing which we repeated many times in the past during this particular satsang is, you know, eventually you have to turn to Swami for the answer, because that's where you're going to get the most authentic answer. Sometimes Swami puts it in a way that we can best understand. Like we were talking about the concept of avatar itself last week. When Swami says, I am an avatar, there is a certain understanding which goes with that. There's a certain learning that is attached to that particular word that when you say Swami is an avatar. So similarly, what Swami says is again probably not comprehensive, and that's why there's a lot of you can say that there's a little difference in the way Swami says it many times. Sometimes He says, I'm Shiva Shakti. Sometimes He says, I'm the reincarnation of Shirdi Baba. Sometimes He says, I'm beyond even a concept of an avatar. And absolutely, He is right every time. I mean, who are we to judge Swami? But I think every time Swami says it, He puts it in a term or in a concept which is within our grasp. And through that, we can actually grow to the higher understanding. So similarly, even to understand who Swami is, when you go back to Swami, the declaration itself happened on many, many occasions. Swami had revealed His divinity to His playmates, probably as early as when Swami was 8, or even when Swami was just born. We know the incidents, we're not going to go back into that. But there are a few incidents where Swami started very openly and very publicly revealing to the people around who Swami was. And we know that 20th of October is a very important date. We celebrate it as a declaration day. We celebrate 23rd May as a very important day, because that was the day when Swami said, "I am Sai Baba."
And through those flowers.
Right, through those flowers and that formed interaction with Swami's father. But this particular date, 8th of March, is very, very significant, because probably this was the first time when Swami used that word, used the name Sai Baba publicly to everybody around, saying that, you know, Sai Baba is, he'll take care. I don't think he has still said I am Sai Baba, but the personality of Sai Baba was literally introduced to the people around him during this date. And 8th March marked a lot of change in Swami's personality, as I think we will be talking briefly today, because it's a very important day in Swami's avataric mission.
Exactly. It happened in Uravakonda. Uravakonda originally was called Uraga Konda. Uraga means snake, and there are two reasons why it got this name. One is because the region abounded in snakes and scorpions and other poisonous creepies and crawlies, because of which it was named Uraga Konda. Also, in the center of this town, even to this day, there exists a hillock or a hill which is shaped like the hood of a cobra. And therefore, Uravakonda, known for its poisonous creatures, that is where Swami was staying with his brother, because his brother Sheshamaraju was teaching in the Karibasava Swami High School, which even to this day exists in Uravakonda. And so, this happened, as you said, on the 8th of March. The 7th of March in 1940, if you see, it is the day of the Shivratri. So, on the Shivratri day, Swami actually sang and danced along the streets with his Pandari Bhajan group. By now, Swami's Pandari Bhajan group had become famous, because, as we had discussed many times before, the Pandari Bhajan group had warded off cholera and other deadly diseases in many villages nearby Puttaparthi as well as Puttaparthi. There was this legend floating around that wherever Pandari Bhajan group sings its bhajans, that place will be free from all diseases and calamities and misfortune. And therefore, Swami's popularity, Swami's glory, the Pandari Bhajan group's glory and popularity preceded them before Swami could even go to Uravakonda. So it was quite popular there, and the whole night, Shivratri night, Swami and his friends and his Pandari Bhajan group were engaged in bhajans, dancing along the road. When it became quite late in the night, Swami's sister Venkamma, she also was there. You know, Venkamma, her son, I think, Sheshamaraju, his wife, and Swami, they all were staying in one little home, the ruins of which still exist to this day. Three small sections. Each room is about like 6 feet by 10 feet, with one little attached bathroom. And it's like a train, you know, one after another, the rooms one after another, one within another. That's how it's a long house.
Right.
And they were staying there. So Venkamma told little Satyam that it's time to go home. He said, "You go home, I'll come back a little later." And Venkamma goes home, and in the village, they sleep quite early, they retire quite early. It becomes dark by 6:37, no electric lights and all around this. So she has retired by that time. Swami, in the meanwhile, goes singing and dancing up to Budagavi, which is almost 5 kilometers away from Uravakonda. And there in a Shiva temple, Swami does the Abhisheka and worship of the Shivalinga. Swami by himself in the altar there. And after that, when he returns back to his home in Uravakonda, it's early in the morning. And the story goes that Venkamma gets up in the morning. She has the habit of seeing God first thing in the morning. And since there were no portraits or pictures or paintings, she would open the door and have the darshan of the Tulsi.
Tulsi Madam used to be there, right?
Yes. So, Tulsi is considered divine. And so, when she opened the door, in front of the Tulsi plant, she saw Swami standing there. I think this is the first time she's actually seeing God early in the morning, rather than the Tulsi. So, she saw Swami and she asked what happened, and Swami said, "No, I got a little delayed there." He walks in. She tells him that you have been awake whole night. You have not had anything to eat. You must eat something. In fact, just the previous night, she had prepared some curry with I'm sorry. Not the previous night. So this morning what happens is, early in the morning, she tells Swami to go have a wash and come back so that she can give him something to eat, because he has been awake the whole night. He's almost done the Shivratri fast. So to break his fast, she wanted to feed him something. Swami goes into the bathroom, the little bathroom that is there, and a few moments later, she hears a shout. She hears a shout from Swami and she rushes there. Swami is holding his foot and seems to be in great pain. So she concludes that a scorpion has stung him, because this place is known for its scorpions. And she doesn't bother asking Swami, because even when she asks, he replies nothing. He calmly walks out of the bathroom holding his foot in pain. She starts, getting very worried. She is sure that a scorpion has stung him. That's why he's in so much pain, and that's why he's holding his foot. She searches for the scorpion. The scorpion is not found. But immediately her shouts actually wake up Sheshamaraju, because he is hardly a few feet away, lying in the room there. So he gets up and both of them tell that a scorpion has stung Raju, it looks like. But Swami calms both of them and tells them to go back to bed and say it's all fine. And he too sleeps. So this thing happened on the early morning of the 8th of March, which is a scorpion sting, but which is a supposed scorpion sting. And as you said, it's very significant. It's also significant because I think, Prem, it highlights how foolish man is in getting deluded. Because in the later years to come, people would attribute Swami's divinity to this, right?
Right. Almost some people would say that something magical about the scorpions on Urukonda, and that's why some magical powers are transferred to Swami. That is one thing that people say, but the people in and around Urukonda attributed to the shrine at Budagavi, some of them to the other shrines in Urukonda, saying that, they're all very powerful deities and they must have blessed Swami. But one thing is, that scorpion was never found, and I think much later, I don't know if Swami has himself said, or people who have seen Swami for many years later, they kind of surmised that it must have been a transcorporeal journey, because it was very similar to the other incidents which used to happen later. So it must have been one of the first transcorporeal journeys which the people around Swami would have witnessed, because the things which Swami started doing after that was very, very different and significant.
Absolutely. Now, in fact, when you were saying that point about different people giving credit to different things, the scorpion got credit, it's like, it reminds one of the statement that failure is an orphan while success has many fathers. because of what Swami did after that and what Swami has done so far, everybody would like to claim a piece of that success. But as you said, the next morning Swami appeared absolutely normal. In fact, he goes out, he does his shopping. There's a list that Sheshamaraju gives him, and he goes, does vegetable shopping. This was possibly his bi-weekly or weekly schedule, where he would go and buy vegetables that are needed for the house. Of course, we know that he had a daily schedule of going twice in a day to two different wells. One Gilakala Bhavi and one Bungalow Bhavi. Gilakala Bhavi was near the house, the well, from which you would get water for washing and bath and ablutions. While the Bungalow Bhavi, which was almost a kilometer away, that's where sweet water was available, which people would drink. So Satyam would go twice a day to fetch water. That was his daily routine. But his weekly routine consisted of getting vegetables. He got brinjals, and brinjal, we now know, the avatar chose as one of his favorite vegetables. In fact, Swami would often say, brinjal brings joy to all. That's how he would say about the brinjal. So he had bought brinjal, but Sheshamaraju tells Venkamma when she's cooking that don't feed Satyam any of these vegetables or anything. Just give him some charu and some buttermilk maybe. Because he appears to be sick, or let us see what happens. Because he has had a scorpion bite in the morning. But Swami doesn't partake any food, and in fact he tells Venkamma that I'm going to go to the Sankulamma temple and come back. And this is possibly the reason why they credit Sankulamma for... Sankulamma is the village deity, goddess. Every village nearby has their own deities. Even if we go to the villages surrounding Puttaparthi, for example, in Puttaparthi, Satyamma is the village deity. Right. Like that, every village has its own village deity, goddess, and I don't know whom they derive from. They usually are a derivation of either Durga, Lakshmi or Saraswati. But So Sankulamma is the village deity in Uruvakonda, and Swami said he's going there, but he didn't return till the evening, which again got Venkamma very worried. Late in the evening when Swami returned, he appeared very dull. He just sat by himself, silent, not speaking much. So Venkamma goes in and gets, thinking that brinjal is something that will get him back to life, gets his favorite brinjal curry with rice and tries to serve it to him, but he's not eating. So she herself picks up and tries to feed him. That is when, you know, Swami just falls down with a thud and he's unconscious. Venkamma is worried. She again calls out to Sheshamaraju, and this time Sheshamaraju, you know, is really worried. Immediately he sends a few of his students, because he was a renowned Telugu teacher there. He sends a few of his students to go and send a telegram to Bukapatnam so that it reaches the parents, Ishwaramma and Pedda Venkamma Raju, to tell them that come immediately to Uruvakonda, something has happened to Satyam. That is what he thinks of, he does first. And then he also summons a doctor. In the meanwhile, everybody around starts gathering there, and you know, everybody is concerned, worried what has happened to Swami. They put water on his face, but he's not revived. They burn a newspaper and make him smell the smoke, thinking that these are different ways they think of arousing him from his unconsciousness, but that doesn't happen. The doctor comes and he also tries to administer some medicine, but nothing of that is working. Late in the evening, that is when they decide that possibly, you know, let's go and pray to Sankulamma. So let's make an offering there and possibly she will cure. You know, when you're desperate, you try everything. So in their faith, they go to the temple. That is the time when Swami first comes out of his unconsciousness. In fact, he just opens his eyes and he tells that the coconut broke into three and closes his eyes. It is after the people have gone to the temple, the Sankulamma temple. In fact, the Sankulamma temple is about 15 to 20 meters away from the Swami's house.
Right.
Just very close by. So they return and they indeed say that that is what has happened. You know, when we broke the coconut to offer, it broke into three pieces. I mean, this is a hint that Swami gives. It is so clear and evident. So though they are thrilled at that moment, after that they go back to their worry. I mean, it is so typical of what man does. Even if we look at our own lives, when Swami does something so fantastic, does this miracle, offers us his visiting card, we are thrilled and we are so amazed and we feel, wow, this is the ultimate, this is God. But a few minutes later, or possibly a few hours later or a few days later, we are back to worry, our own worries and fears, and it's almost as if we have forgotten who Swami is. That continues to happen to this day, so one can actually forgive those people who were not even convinced that Swami is divine, to have forgotten that thing and again started worrying about Swami, what to do. And that is when, as you said, Kasibatla Sriram Murthy, when he was, this is another person, they used to all call him Murthy Garu, a respected person in the place, who had great love for this boy. So he decided to volunteer and stay there through the night also. He was given the duty of injecting Swami with right. the medicine every now and then. That is when the first revelation came.
Right. I think that's when, late into the night when nobody was there and this person was taking care of Swami, he wakes up and tells that, don't worry, Sai Baba will take care. And that's the first time he's hearing and listening to this name, and he is wondering, who is this person, and you know, but why is Satyam speaking about him? And that was probably the first time when he spoke about it, and I'm sure he must have shared it with the others also. But as you know, as Professor Kasturi would write, when everybody thought that Swami was actually unconscious, he said actually was in a state of super consciousness, because the series of things which he does after that, when I think the parents don't reach Uruvakonda still after the telegram was sent.
That is the next day morning, because through the night, Kasibatla Sriram Murthy has sat, right. And he has had this amazing revelation where, when he's thinking what has happened and he's about to inject, Swami actually refuses the injection, right. Wakes up and he tells, don't worry, Sai Baba will take care. And I'm sure in next day in the morning, he would have told everybody what has happened. So while it is thrilling to hear, Swami is still unconscious. And Sheshamaraju is now really worried, because it's been like almost 12 hours.
Right.
And that's why, as you said, he decides that what is it, the parents have not yet reached.
Right. And that's when I think he sends again one more person on a bicycle. And the idea is to, you know, probably drive all the way to Bukapatnam and try to go and reach the parents in person. So I think just as they are starting off, Swami again wakes up and tells, don't worry, they're in the bus stand. They're just on their way.
You send him to the bus stand instead?
Send him to the bus stand instead.
They don't know the route to this house.
Right. And I think even today it's difficult to find the route to that place.
Correct.
Right. And we've all been to Rokodna. It's not easy to find out exactly where Swami's house is. It's a big town actually compared to, I'm sure, even Bukapatnam. It's considerably Urukonda is a bigger town, and considered to Puttaparthi, of course, it's like going into a city almost. So that's why I think Swami says that, you know, you send him to the bus stand instead because they have already reached and you can get them here. I think maybe the same day or maybe a day after that is the other incident of the neighbor being corrected.
The same day, in fact, because when Sheshamaraju sends out that person on the bicycle, they find what Swami has said is indeed true. I mean, look at this, revelation after revelation. The parents are actually getting down from the bus and they look lost. And that is when he says, come, and he takes them along. You know, he takes them along to the house of Sheshamaraju. And when they get there, there is for the first time possibly, you know, a change in emotion, because till now there are people who are a little sad, there are people who are worried, there are people who are in awe, there are people who are, mostly they are curious as to what is this happening. Now when Ishwaramma comes, her mother's heart, it just melts. You know, she breaks down and starts weeping inconsolably. Possibly this is the first time when others also, you know, they catch on and they also start weeping, because this is something, this is an emotion that possibly only a mother feels for the child. No, after all, this is my child. I don't care what are the amazing things that are happening or what is strange, what is all, I don't care about all this. My child seems to be in pain and that's it. So she breaks down and she's crying. And even as she's crying, in a kind of an anticlimax, Swami gets up again, you know, gets up from his unconsciousness, I mean super consciousness, as Professor Kasturi puts it, and he says that, what is that Narayan Shastri over there telling? You know, he's got it all wrong. Tell him to stop doing this. And that is when, you know, some of the people are looking at each other, and Sheshamaraju knows that Narayan Shastri is a very revered Sanskrit scholar who lives very close by, 2-3 houses on the other side, he is actually shocked with the manner in which Swami is speaking. In fact, the way Swami addresses Sheshamaraju also, till this point of time in his life, every time it's with the utmost reverence, because Sheshamaraju, I think, is definitely much older than Swami.
Much older than Swami.
10 to 15 years possibly elder to Swami, and therefore, almost like how a son would address the father, it's with that kind of respect and reverence that Swami has been addressing the elder brother. But at this point, when this so-called, in quotes, scorpion bite has happened, Swami talks to his brother as equals. You know, I possibly feel this is another of Swami's message, because God always speaks to everyone as equal. He considers everybody equal. That's why, irrespective of how we are, what we do in life, He would address us as Prema Swarupalara, embodiments of love. We call Swami as an embodiment of love. He calls us as embodiments of love. Because I think for God, it's only for God that everybody and everything are truly equal. So that is another subtle revelation, possibly, treating his own brother as an equal and speaking to him in that term. So, but this has actually shocked Sheshamaraju. And now this thing, when he is speaking against Narayan Shastri, it is really shocking, because he thinks his brother has become audacious. He has got possessed by something, or some madness has come. And he shares this worry with the father, Pedda Venkamaraju. And because Swami is so insistent, Pedda Venkamaraju and the brother go actually to Narayan Shastri's home to call him. And they find Narayan Shastri discoursing there, giving a lecture to some people. And
the Ahamsa Gita, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
That is what they get to know later, because I don't think they had the knowledge of Ahamsa Gita.
Right.
So he is discoursing there. And when Pedda Venkamaraju says that, my son is saying, like, can you just come, because he is not fine, Narayan Shastri actually is first angered. He says, who is that? Who is anybody to talk like this? You know, do they have any idea of how much I have gone into this? And this chit of a boy is speaking in this manner. And Pedda Venkamaraju actually says that, you know, he's not listening to us. Possibly he'll listen to you. Why don't you come and drive in some sense? But please come there. And Narayan Shastri storms and comes there. And as soon as he enters the threshold, this little boy tells him, starts reeling out verses, as you said, from the Hamsa Gita. And he tells, Hamsa Gita is... Yeah. He starts reeling out verses from the Hamsa Gita and starts making corrections to Pandit Narayan Shastri, so much so that after entering the threshold, this Pandit Narayan Shastri is on his knees. He bows down to the boy and he says that you are not an ordinary one. This is not Dayam but Daivam. Dayam meaning a spirit, evil spirit, while Daivam means divinity. And he says this is divine. This is something that I have never come across in my life. And possibly this was the first among the scholars to fall at Swami's feet, because after that, we have lost count of the number of scholars and wise men who have actually fallen at his feet in reverence and love.
And as we are saying that, you know, this is probably one of the most important turning points, because the personality of Swami actually started changing. Till this point, he was always seen as that very obedient. I mean, of course, Swami, not that he became disobedient after that, but that personality changed in that sense. It was a very different Swami, different Satyam whom they saw. He was more aloof, he was more withdrawn, he was more firm in whatever he was saying, whatever he was declaring. Like even, I think, during the Bhukkapatnam days or early Puttaparthi days, Swami was doing many of these miracles. We know the Kalpavriksham, we know what happened at the Hanuman temple, we know Swami taking out objects from an empty bag. All of this was happening, but Swami will always tell the boys, don't speak about it to others, don't, you know, keep it to yourself. But this was the time when Swami was began doing it all publicly, began claiming what, or rather revealing what he was publicly and more firmly. And we know that the culmination was that 20th of October when Swami said, this is it. You know, don't try anymore. It's not worthwhile. Because the period between 8th March and 20th October is the time when the family went through a lot of turmoil and made a lot of attempts to bring back Swami in that sense. They thought, to bring things to normalcy. And that's why the 20th October Swami said, don't try anymore, because this is, you know, the final thing. It's not going to change anymore. So that 8th of March, which is an anniversary today, is a very, very important occasion. And I think one more episode which happened around the 8th of March. I mean, after that, a lot of things happen in April and May. I think the other is, apart from getting the doctor, they also try to get somebody who was like a black magician or something. And I forget the details. Even to him, Swami starts telling that, well, are you trying to cure me? Don't you realize that I am the person you worship? So you offer your prayers and you go away. And he's another person who actually falls at Swami's feet and goes away. That was another episode which happens right around 8th and 9th March.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, speaking about these people, these so-called doctors and Pandit Narayan Shastri being humbled by Swami, one thing that becomes very evident is, in order to appreciate God, what we need is not intelligence or knowledge. That is not what takes us close to God. We need, as I think we discussed this last week when we were speaking about who is Sai Baba, in the same discourse in 1974 summer course, Swami says that what you need is eyes to see, and what not ordinary eyes. Swami says you need the Jnana Netra, the eyes of wisdom. Because, you know, in another Ugadi discourse, I remember Swami saying that the sun is shining in all its brightness and splendor, but the blind man is not able to see it. However intelligent a person may... if you don't have eyes to see the sun, you can't deny the existence of the sun. In the same way, Swami says, at night when you're sleeping, when you're asleep, not at night, when you're asleep, also you can't see the sun. So Swami says, however intelligent a person may be, whether it's a king or a minister or anybody else, they can't see the sun if they're sleeping. So Swami says, therefore the sleeping, however wise, intelligent and smart they may be, and those who are blind, again, however wise or intelligent, smart they may be, they cannot see the sun, but that doesn't mean the sun doesn't exist. So, why this episode is so wonderful and thrilling is because to reach Swami, to get Swami, we don't need intelligence. We need not feel that I am dumb or I am not smart enough, I am not good enough, I don't have the abilities for me to get Swami, because all those don't matter at all. And this Swami beautifully, in one of the discourse clips, I think clip A, Swami states this. He states what is the necessary attitude that we require to actually see Swami and appreciate Him in all His glory. And why is it that we are not able to see Swami in spite of whatever our education or knowledge may be? Dear listeners, we'll play that clip and continue our discussion after that. A clip from that final discourse that Swami delivered during the summer course in 1974.
Adhe nidhamugane nedu sai yokka tattvanni kudanu okka bahir drishti endu maatrame variki gocharam ayyetundi okka konni rakamainatundi drishyamunu maatrame vaaru puraskarinchukoni sai ittivaadu attivaadu ani nirnayinchadaniki poonukuntu vastunnaru.
In the same manner, with regard to the aspect of Sai, some people, many people, only looking at the appearance, looking at the external manifestations and attaching importance to such appearances and external manifestations, they are coming to the conclusion that Sai is such and such, Sai is such and such.
Sai lo unnatundi ka pavitramainatundi tattvamunu, yadarthamainatundi swaroopamunu, nitya satyamainatundi ka sadgunamunu, వారు ఏమాత్రం కొన్ని గుర్తించడానికి పూనుకోవటం లేదు.
దే ఆర్ నాట్ మేకింగ్ ఎనీ అటెంప్ట్ టు రికగ్నైజ్ అండ్ రియలైజ్ ది సీక్రెట్ ఆస్పెక్ట్స్ ది సీక్రెట్నెస్ దట్ ఈస్ అవైలబుల్ ఇన్ సాయి ది ట్రూత్ దట్ ఈస్ పర్మనెంట్ అండ్ ది అన్చేంజింగ్ ట్రూత్ దట్ ఈస్ ఇన్ సాయి అండ్ ది గుడ్ క్వాలిటీస్ దట్ ఆర్ ఇన్ హిమ్ దే ఆర్ నాట్ మేకింగ్ ఎన్ అటెంప్ట్ టు లుక్ ఎట్ దీస్ ఇంటర్నల్ క్వాలిటీస్
సర్వశక్తులు కొన్ని సాయిలో హస్తగతమైపోయినటువంటివి.
All powers are in the hand and in the control of Sai's hand.
కాని దురదృష్టవశాత్తు అనేక మంది విద్యావంతులు ఇంకా మనే అనేక మంది ఇంకా ఉత్తమమైనటువంటి యొక్క స్థితిని అందుకున్నటువంటి వారు అనేక మంది యోగులు జ్ఞానులు సత్పురుషులు అని చెప్పేటువంటి వారు పండితులు మహత్తమ పండితులు ఇంకా పండితులు ఇంకా పండితులు ఇంకా చేత్తాడు పొడవుతో పేర్లు పెట్టుకున్నటువంటి పండితులు కూడాను కేవలము పైన చూసేటువంటి యొక్క ఈ మెరికల్స్ 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 అని దుష్టమైనటువంటి ఈ మెరికల్స్ పైనే వాళ్ళ దృష్టిని ఏకాగ్రత పరుస్తున్నారు. కానీ సత్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క హృదయాన్ని గుర్తించేటువంటి ప్రాప్తులు వాళ్ళలో లేవు.
Unfortunately, many educated people, many people who are occupying high positions, several people who call themselves yogis, mahayogis, and several people who call themselves pandits and great pandits, gyanis, people who think that they are wise people, and having all kinds of qualifications attached to their names, which are as long as a long rope. Such people, unfortunately, they only talk of the miracles, miracles, and talk of miracles, and they think of the miracles. They do not make an attempt to see what there is inside, the strength and the truth and the great quality that is inside.
ఈనాడు గొప్ప గొప్ప విద్యావంతులని విర్రవీగేటువంటి యొక్క బుర్రలు కొంతవరకునైనా యోచించక దైవత్వంలో ఉన్నటువంటి సత్యత్వాన్ని గుర్తించక మా విద్యయే గొప్పదని అనేక ఉపనిషత్తుల గురించి వేదముల గురించి ఇతిహాసముల గురించి పురాణముల గురించి ఏదో ఒక విధమైనటువంటి రీతిగా ప్రకటిస్తూ వస్తున్నారే కాని ఈ ప్రకటించడానికి తగినటువంటి ఆధారభూతమైనటువంటి వాడు ఈ బృందావనంలో ఉంటున్నాడని ఈ యొక్క ఆధారభూతం యొక్క వ్యక్తిత్వంతో కొంతవరకు సంబంధాన్ని అయినా కల్పించుకోవటానికి పూనుకుంటున్నారా ఈ వెర్రిబుర్రలు?
Today, many people who are educated, who are proud of the kind of education which they possess, they come and they are not realizing the truth that is the basis of divinity. They talk of their knowledge, knowledge of Upanishads, knowledge of Vedas, knowledge of Puranas, and they keep on talking about whatever knowledge and education which they possess very proudly, not realizing that the very basis of these Upanishads, Vedas and Puranas is present here in Vrindavan.
కేవలం వారి ప్రభావమే ప్రధానమైనటువంటి ఉద్దేశంలో ఏదో మాకు నాకు ఛాన్సులు ఇచ్చేస్తే చాలు మేము మాట్లాడిపోవాలనేటువంటి యొక్క ఉరుకు నవ్వుతూ కేవలం వెర్రి ఆశలతో వస్తున్నారే తప్ప దీనికి నిజమైనటువంటి స్వరూపం అక్కడ ఉన్నది దాన్ని దర్శించుకుని వస్తామనేటువంటి యొక్క వ్యక్తులు ఏమాత్రమో నాకు కనిపించటం లేదు.
Many of these people attach great importance to their own teaching and they are anxious to have 4 chances or 5 chances by which to exhibit their knowledge and their teachings in a very foolish manner. Such people do not have the feeling that they are actually going to a place where the very basis of their knowledge is present. It will be much better for us to have try and have darshan of this basis rather than have an exhibitionist proclamation of our own knowledge and of our own teaching.
కేవలం ఒక దైవత్వమైనటువంటి వారికి ఏమాత్రం కూడా హృదయ స్థాయిలో లేదని అర్థమవుతుంటుండాలి.
when one looks at such attitudes, when one looks at people who behave in this manner, it becomes clear that true divinity, true idea of what is divine and what is the basis, is not present in their knowledge and in their hearts.
ఇలాంటి వారు కేవలము ఒక గంధ పరిచయం తప్ప దీనిని నాలెడ్జ్ అని చెప్పడంలో కూడా ఒక అవమానమే, దీనిని ఎనర్జీ అని చెప్పడంలో సత్యం.
Such people are only here who can be described as those who have acquaintance of books, who have derived all that they know by reading books. They have not derived any knowledge. In fact, one cannot say that they have any wisdom of things which matter.
కనుక దైవత్వాన్ని గుర్తించుకోవటము ఎట్టి వారికి కూడా సాధ్యం కానటువంటిది.
It is not possible for any kind of person to recognize and truly understand the nature of God.
I think that puts the whole discussion to rest, you know, because Swami says you just cannot understand. So it is definitely a foolish attempt, like they say, like the attempt of a salt doll that goes to measure the size of the ocean. All that the salt doll can do is just get dissolved within and become part of the ocean. So that's all what we can do, and yet to derive joy and to discuss all of Swami's leelas, we use this theme as Who is Sai Baba as an opportunity to continue our satsang.
Really, I mean, the only adjective you can think of in listening to that particular clip is Swami's unforgiving there, the way he's saying Panditlu, Mahapanditlu. And the series, you know, how many other titles you have, you don't understand. So very beautifully Swami said, you know, there are people who have mastered the Upanishads, the people who have spent a lifetime studying these Vedas and all of these very advanced texts, without realizing that the source of all that knowledge is living in Vrindavan. You don't think of that. You know, how beautifully Swami put that. And I mean, how very true. It's not only about those who don't acknowledge Swami as divine. The Swami is saying that even those who come as devotees, you're only looking at the opportunities you have to probably share what you already know. And as somebody was saying, you know, one of the disadvantages of being a speaker is when you speak, you actually share what little you know. When you listen, you actually gain, right? So I think most of us who come and the urge to share is actually becomes like one of the disadvantages you have. Swami is saying that even if you come here thinking that this is Swami, instead of having that as the focus, you're thinking, where are the opportunities I can get of, you know, self-glorification or of promoting yourself? Swami is saying, what an opportunity you're losing if you acknowledge that Swami is all this and then you don't strive for that. I mean, so many things which Swami said in that particular discourse, which is so very important.
When you say that, when Swami says that people do not realize that the very basis of all that they speak and all that they seek, all that they speak and seek is actually present here. I was reminded of the experience of Swami Amrutananda. Swami Amrutananda was a disciple with Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.
Ramana Maharshi.
Ramana Maharshi, I'm sorry. Right. With Ramana Maharshi. He had spent 17 years with Ramana Maharshi, and after Ramana Maharshi passed away, I think in the 1950s, 1950 maybe Ramana Maharshi passed away, or early 1950s,
right.
That is when he came to Prashanthinilayam. He was an 85-year-old person, an old man, really old man, and that is when, you know, Swami called him for an interview and took him to the inner interview room. The inner interview room in those days was just that little space below the spiral staircase that led to Swami's room on top. So there was hardly any space between each other, and there when they stood, you know, Swami asked him whether he remembered a special Mahaganapati homam that he had done as a 7-year-old boy. And of course Swami Amrutananda remembered, and he said yes, it was a very detailed ritual that he had performed even as a 7-year-old, and he had done that Mahaganapati homam. And Swami asked him, what is the phala, what is the fruit of that entire ritual? He says, Swami, I don't know, means what is that I got, I don't know, but I'm sure it has helped me in some manner. Then Swami says, no, I'm not asking what you got, I'm asking what is it that is said in the scriptures, in the shastras, that you will get as a reward for doing that. And he says, Swami, the reward is supposed to be the darshan of Lord Ganesha in that Homakunda, you know. in the
golden form of Ganesha.
Yeah, because it's in the it's in that sacrificial pit, and it's the fiery flaming form of Ganesha. So therefore they call it the golden form of Ganesha. So he says that is what is promised. And Swami says, you know something, I have called you here and called you into the interview room only for that. Whatever is said, you know, I'm sorry. Before that, Swami asks him, so did you get that darshan? And he says, Swami, I was a 7-year-old boy and I don't know. I don't think that a 7-year-old boy can get all this, you know, because maybe that sincerity is not there. Maybe it's for the adults, not for the youngsters. And Swami says, no. There is no discrimination like that. When the scriptures have said that, that is what it is. And in fact, it is to grant you that long pending darshan that I have called you here and I have called you into this interview room. And at that very moment, the 85-year-old Swami Amritananda has the vision of that golden Ganesha, because Swami's face transmutes into that fiery form, that fiery yet warm form, flaming gold of Ganesha. And it's only later that we get to know that this is what has happened, because that vision knocks Swami Amritananda out of his senses. And it is said for 3 days he is lost in that bliss. It's only after 3 days he comes to his senses, returns to abnormalcy, if we can call it that way, returns to the abnormal state in the world, and that is when he reveals that he is in bliss because he had this darshan. So you see, the ultimate objective for which we do all our spiritual practices, everything, that is there here, right, available. And yet missing that, sadly, as Swami says, we come here to further our own glory, build up our own kind of following and build up our own things. It is indeed very sad and pitiable. Without knowing God, if we do that, it is sad. Having known God, if we do that, I think it's even more sad.
I mean, the case of Swami Amritananda is actually a very classic journey a devotee goes through. In fact, when you're talking about who is Swami? Because they say the first time when Swami Amritananda comes to Swami, Swami calls him Amritam, right? And when Swami says that, he's surprised, because that's how his guru used to address him. And only his guru used to address him like that.
Ramana Maharshi.
And I mean, you know the age difference between Swami Amritananda and Swami. So when Swami was calling him such an endearing tone, Amritam, like he was literally taken aback. So probably the first thing which would have struck him is, you know, the guru and Swami is one and the same. Because I think when we first started this episode, we narrated that incident of how Swami said that Ramana Maharshi has merged in me when, you know, the moment when he was taking Mahasamadhi. So probably the first thing that he saw was the unity of his own guru and Swami. The next one is this episode, you know, where he has this vision of Ganesha. So probably you'd have thought that Swami and Ganesha is one. And if you follow the traditional Hindu school of thought, Ganesha is looked at as one of the smaller deities. He's supposed to be the son of Lord
Shiva.
So probably you would have related to Swami as being that deity of Lord Ganesha, to whom he has worshipped. You know, he's been worshipping since a child. But then later, same Amritananda is the one who sees that episode of the episode which happens where Swami goes and stops an army officer from shooting himself.
In Bhopal.
So it was Swami Amritananda who was there with Swami when Swami went into that trance. And then, you know, later he was the person who gets to read that letter which that army officer writes to Swami with the whole detail. And he says that, you know, he has, of course, met a lot of great yogis and sannyasis. In fact, he says, I've seen a lot of this Parakaya Pravesha, where, you know, a person gives up the body and enters another body or takes a different form. But he says, I've never come across one person taking multiple forms like this.
This is Kaya Srishti.
Right. And he says, then you're creating an entire family. You're creating a husband, wife and a child and a porter and all the, you know, hold alls and luggage and everything. So he says it's not possible for a normal yogi or a great Mahatma to do all this. So literally, you know, he's seen that entire journey from thinking that Swami is his guru to a deity to, you know, that supreme lord who is actually the one who has created the entire creation, and there's nothing which is impossible for him.
Absolutely. And, you know, when Swami is speaking also in the beginning, when we heard in the clip, about miracles and the importance that is given to miracles. We had this discussion even last week where miracles are only visiting cards. They just introduce us to Swami. it doesn't mean that knowing his miracles means that we know him. We just know as much of the person as much as a visiting card allows us to know about the person. And therefore, Swami says that as an introduction, a miracle is great, but after that, the obsession for miracles is only a distraction. Interestingly, you know, even in that discourse in 1974, Swami narrates of two miracles. Swami says, you know, miracles are happening aplenty. He says, even recently, in April, Swami says, this summer course I think is happening in May. So it must be in the previous month. Swami gives the example of a gentleman. He says that this gentleman who is sitting here, I mean, apparently he's sitting there in the summer course listening to the discourse. Swami says that he had come with me to Bombay, and from Bombay he had to go to a foreign country. He took blessings and went there. Swami said, I gave him a ring. And when he went to the foreign country, in that foreign country, he fell very sick. He was unconscious. And the day he had to leave from that place, he saw that all his ticket, his papers, important necessary papers that he needed, all were missing. And because of his sickness, because of his illness, he wasn't able to recollect where was what. That is when he thought of Swami, because he saw the ring on his finger, you know. And Swami says, that instant itself, somebody from the airline came and escorted him and put him on the flight, and he's here. You know, Swami didn't go into all the little details that we go into to in order to make it more thrilling. Swami just narrates and says, that's it, you know. Basically, it was all done. And Swami says, the instant he thought of me, that connect happened. And when we look at that incident, the thinking came because he was able to see the ring on his finger, and possibly that is the reason Swami gives, to help us connect with him, to give us a physical reminder that, you know, turn to Swami, turn to Swami. In fact, again, as I had narrated sometime back, one Dr. Vijay Kumar from Chennai, he narrated how Swami told him while dispensing medicines, don't give 10 pills if you are supposed to give 10, give only 8, give a chance of 2 pills at least for my grace to work. You know, you allow me, because ultimately the curing is done by Lord, Vaidya Narayano Harihi. And Swami also narrates another miracle. He says, you know, there is this gentleman from Calcutta, he had gone to London. Him also, you know, I gave him a ring, but he said, Swami, I don't need the ring, I don't want the ring and all that. I said, no, when I'm giving, you should take it. He took the ring, he said, if Swami is giving, I accept it. And when he went to London, you know, Swami says, the cars there move so fast. You know, it is faster than the aeroplane itself, Swami says, you know, in order to give an idea of how fast the cars are moving. And this gentleman meets with an accident in the car, and the car is crushed beyond recognition, but this gentleman escapes unhurt, but his ring is smashed. He walks back home, and Swami says the moment he reached his home, there was a person waiting with a telegram telling, this telegram was from Swami, and it told him that, don't worry, I will take care, everything will be fine. And Swami says that for a person to go from the Vrindavan Ashram to the Whitefield telegram office, it takes 6 minutes. But this person already received his telegram over there, and he said that after that he has come and settled back here. He has left London and come off here. You know, so after narrating these, Swami says, like these are happening by the thousands on a daily basis. And the purpose for which I have come is not to fulfill these small desires or attend to these small incidents like what I have narrated to you now. You know, Swami himself is belittling all these. He's saying it's not something to be fascinated about. These things are happening in thousands. So what are you doing by going behind these? Swami says, there are great truths which I have come to establish. There is a considerable change in human outlook which I have to bring about. And then Swami says, no one can stop me or deter me from fulfilling the task for which I have come, namely, the establishment of the one eternal truth. So that, Swami says, is what I have come for, and that is what you have to see and feel awe. Establishment of that one eternal truth, not these little miracles.
Right. But I mean, talking about those miracles, really, Swami narrating a miracle is actually a very, very rare thing. And it's surprising, because some of the things which Swami would narrate, I recall in Vrindavan in Thrai session, you would also recall, there was one Hindi lecturer, and I don't know, any number of times Swami would go past him and Swami will point to him and Swami would say he had an accident, Swami saved him. Yeah. You know, as you were saying, there are so many which happen all around the world, but there are very, very few that Swami really acknowledges and Swami says, you know, and that is when Swami chooses to show himself. There's another incident with someone who's narrating how there was one devotee of Swami who was performing his daughter's wedding or something, And the only thing the in-laws asked for is after the wedding, they should all be taken to Tirupati for a darshan. So everything went on well, and this person told Swami about this trip to Tirupati, and Swami said, yeah, definitely go and come. Don't worry, I'll take care. Everything will be fine. So the whole marriage party is actually heading towards Tirupati, and I think there they have a breakdown of the vehicle or something like that in the middle of nowhere. There's nobody around and they're stuck in an odd hour. And I think that's when they see these trucks which go for having their body built. Just the, I don't know what you call that, just the chassis or something.
Only the chassis will be there. Only the chassis on which their bodybuilding takes place, correct.
So two trucks like that come on the highway. So these people stop and they find that there's this family which is stranded. They come down. They help them repair the car and everything, and they don't take any money. They just go away after that. So these people go to Tirupati, and in Tirupati they have very good darshan and come back. So this person comes back, and the student who was with Swami that time was narrating this. So Swami is telling this devotee, hey, tell them what happened in Tirupati. So he thought for some time. He said, Swami, we had very good darshan. Yes, I told you, and Swami blessed us with good darshan. Swami's like, all that is fine, but tell me on the way to Tirupati what happened. They said, no, Swami, nothing happened. Then Swami is telling this fool, I'm telling him to narrate for a certain purpose, and he's forgetting that only, and he says, didn't your car stop in between? Didn't you know what to do? And then these two trucks came and all that. I said, yes, Swami, these two people came and they helped us a lot. Swami said, that is the thing. I came with these two trucks, dressed up as Darjis, and came and helped you with your car, and you're forgetting that main point, right? I mean, how many of our lives probably have incidents like this which we have missed? And it's so very great for having to, Swami himself acknowledging that these are things which have happened. But again, it goes back to Swami telling that, we are giving more importance than necessary. The reason why Swami is going on reiterating that is, Swami wants us to look beyond these things. As Swami was saying, as Swami would often say, that if you want to be, when you want to associate yourself with Swami, if you want to associate yourself with Swami's work, you have to first understand what Swami's work is. Swami's work is not limited to saving people like this. It's not limited to
medical cures,
medical cures or giving right and giving answering prayers like this. Swami is saying, I'm doing all of this for a higher purpose. So if you want to be a participant in Swami's work, that's what you have to look at, and rather than getting stuck in all of these small things.
The other message, of course, that comes through from all these miracles is, it's a reminder to us that let's not limit Swami in any way, because there is no limit to Swami's powers. And I think Swami himself in one part of this discourse says about it, it's amazing to listen to it in his own voice. I think it's audio clip C, I think. And Swami narrates about the powers of God.
There is no limitation to my powers. నా తత్వానికి ఏమాత్రం కూడా ఒక విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క నియమం లేదు. There is no limitation or fixing up or confining my own aspect in a narrow place. అనంతమైనటువంటి యొక్క శక్తి, అనంతమైనటువంటి తత్వము, అనంతమైనటువంటి యొక్క వ్యక్తిత్వము నా హస్తమందు ఉంటున్నది. Infinite powers and broad aspects and infinite aspects are present in my hand. అయితే నాకు నేను చెప్పుకోవటం కూడా ఒక్కొక్క సమయంలో అవసరం వస్తుంటుంది. But to state these things in regard to myself, sometimes it becomes necessary. తెలియనటువంటి వారికి చెప్పి ప్రయోజనం ఉండదు. For people who do not know, there is no use telling them. తెలిసినటువంటి వారికి చెప్పనక్కరలేదు. For people who know, there is no need to tell them. తెలిసి తెలియనటువంటి వారికి నా విజిటింగ్ కార్డ్ ఇవ్వటం అత్యవసరం. For people who know, who also do not know, it is necessary for me to give my visiting card. Kanuka nenu ee naru naa tattvanni gurinchi meeku cheppadaniki ponukunnanante oka visiting card andichetuvanti yokka lakshyam ante maatram tappa aneka rakamulaatuvanti bhavamulato meeru oohinchetuvanti reetiga kaadu. If today I have undertaken to tell you about my own aspect, it is with a view to hand in to you my visiting card. It is not with any other purpose which you may be having in your heart or in your mind.
It goes back to what we were saying, that the incident which Swami was narrating, if really Swami was standing there to market himself in that true sense, there is Swami's every discourse should be only that. Swami should only be start to finish talking only about the miracles which are happening. And for many times we've seen Swami himself hardly giving any importance to some of these things when people speak about somebody being saved or Swami's manifestations happening somewhere, Vibhuti manifestations happening somewhere. Swami will, you know, make it so very insignificant. Swami will speak of it as a very personal gift, more than anything else. Swami will speak of it as a very personal gift, which you don't have to talk about to others. You know, if somebody, your mother or somebody gives you something, your father gives you something out of love, it's not something to publicize your father's love for you or your mother's love for you. You know, you just feel it, you enjoy it, you experience it. You don't have to tell anybody else, to show it to anybody else and say, see, this is how much my mother loves me, or this is how great my mother and father is. So I think the very fact that Swami does not speak much of it, these things, does not give importance, is that from Swami's point of view, these are like the smallest things for him.
But you know, all said and done, we love listening to miracles. In fact, most of our talks also, we definitely use the miracles, because we are definitely not epitomes of selflessness. We want to market, and for marketing we need these miracles. So, means, you know, furthering the analogy that you said, I feel even if the son or daughter goes out and tells about how much the father or mother loves, I don't think the mother or father will mind that. But just speaking about how a mother and father loves without actually loving back in return, I think that is unforgivable. So while we may enjoy Swami's leelas and discourse and like enjoy the Sai Bhagavatam, I think if we forget to love Swami back, what is meant by loving Swami back is to value everything he says, do what he likes, conduct ourselves in a manner which he loves. If we don't do that, then it's absolutely meaningless. So Swami definitely would like us to only, I mean, he is not bothered whether we share his miracles and market him or not, but he definitely wants us to follow what he has said so that we achieve that ultimate goal of the eternal truth. So therefore, while it's okay that we share, let us not forget the primary goal is to reach that eternal truth. Because if we don't do that, then it's, the whole thing is just becomes a kind of waste. And you know, one reason possibly why we tend to give importance to these miracles, let's face it, is because of our lack of faith. Though it might seem very drastic when I say this, if I believe 100% that Swami is divine and nothing is impossible for him, will I get amazed by the miracle? No, it's very natural, right? It's only because most of the time I think of Swami as a person like me only. Just possibly a better person, but a person like me. That's why when he does something, I feel, wow, man, this is amazing. Because if I truly and sincerely believe in my heart that he is divine and all powers are in him, there's no limit to his powers and everything is possible. If I come and tell that, you know, I fell from the aeroplane and I said Sai Ram and I crashed to ground, nothing happened to me. Okay, so what? Means, yeah, that's fine. It's absolutely acceptable. The way Prahlada accepted in front of his father Hiranyakashipu. But the very reason that we feel awe is because we forget who Swami is. And Swami again makes a mention of this in the same discourse. You know, I think there's another clip, one more final clip that we have got to play. And Swami tells that this is a mistake we make because of which we tend to forget his reality.
నేను సామాన్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క వ్యక్తిత్వంగా నేను సంచరిస్తూ ఆడుతూ పాడుతూ మాటలాడుతూ తిరుగుతూ ఉండటం చేత ఇందులో ఉన్నటువంటి యొక్క వ్యక్తిత్వాన్ని అర్థం చేసుకోవటం కూడాను ఒక విధమైనటువంటి శక్తివంతులు కూడాను అసాధ్యమే.
It is because I am like an ordinary individual while I am talking to you, while I am singing with you, while I am playing with you. I appear like one of you, like an ordinary individual. In this context, even for people with great strength, it is not easy for them to differentiate between my true nature and between what appears when I am like this.
మానవత్వాన్ని ఏకత్వపరిచి బ్రహ్మత్వమైనటువంటి తత్వమును నిరూపించి దైవత్వం అనేటువంటి యొక్క స్థానంలో చేర్చేటువంటి ప్రయత్నమే నా యొక్క లక్ష్యం.
మై ఆబ్జెక్ట్ ఈస్ టు ఎస్టాబ్లిష్ ది యూనిటీ ఇన్ మ్యాన్కైండ్ అండ్ టు ప్రీచ్ టు దెమ్ అండ్ టు రివీల్ టు దెమ్ ది ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ డివినిటీ ఆఫ్ బ్రహ్మన్ అండ్ టు టెల్ దెమ్ దట్ ఈస్ ది ఓన్లీ రియల్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ అండ్ ఆల్ మ్యాన్కైండ్ ఈజ్ వన్.
Again, Swami is ending with, you know, what is the whole purpose behind this entire thing? And, you know, even as you were saying that, when we dwell so much on these miracles, the idea is reinforcement of our own faith. And here when Swami is saying that the more you look at my human nature, the more you look at me moving around humanly, I think many times it would happen that the closer you are physically to Swami, and that's when you get more deluded by it, and the more you actually sometimes end up celebrating some of these miracles. And I don't know whether you had this experience. Sometimes we will be telling something with so much of awe and excitement to somebody who's a devotee, who has probably come and seen Swami only once, or who worships Swami without having had Swami's darshan. They will not really be surprised by what you're telling.
Correct.
Right? Because for them it will be like, yeah, I mean, this is expected of Swami, right? But we will be like, no, I've noticed this, you know, I've witnessed this, I was there when it happened. Because I think the more time you spend near Swami physically, you get more deluded and you more tend to celebrate some of these things.
Another way in which this finds expression, I remember this episode, I think it was Bhagwan's 80th birthday. Yes, 80th birthday celebrations. And we were all part of a drama that would be presented on the day before his birthday, which is the 22nd, the convocation drama. And so the convocation drama was done, and it was a nice success. We had a nice time with Bhagwan coming on stage and spending time with us. And then Swami retired, and we were cleaning up the Purnachandra stage and everything so that we return it back to normal. At that point, what happened was one of the speakers that had been stacked, that was being removed, it turned over and it crashed onto the back portion of Swami's open car that had been parked there, the car that would be used to bring Swami to the Hillview Stadium the next day, you know. So it was a Mercedes open car.
A convertible car.
And as this speaker came crashing down, it fell on the tail lamp, and the glass of the tail lamp, it was not glass, it was fiberglass, yeah, plastic and glass, it got shattered, you know, it got shattered to bits. And oh my God, I remember Padmanabhan sir came in the night there, because it was almost 8:39 at night, and he came and he was like, what do? We don't get this spare part in India. And this is the car Swami has chosen to go for. And we'll be taking out this car with a broken back, this lamp, tail lamp. And no way, you know, he made all the calls everywhere. No, that part is not available immediately. It's not there in Bangalore or anything. You have to ask for it, it'll be brought. The fastest they can do it is within 2 days. But you need it for the next day morning. And you know, the whole night, almost till 10:30, 11, we were all worried. But ultimately what was done was, those little pieces were actually brought together and stuck using glue. And they were put and pasted with tape. And finally, Padmanabhan sir said that we'll put such floral decorations that nobody will notice the tail lamp broken. And that was what happened, you know, in the night. And the next day, actually, I was telling my father this. I was telling, you know, yesterday what a thing happened, what so much trouble, you know, so much of worry we were. And I was letting him know how pensive the mood was. And he said, what foolish, why you are trying all that? You could have simply told Swami, he would have waved his hand and given you that, you know. For him, it was so natural, and I felt, come on, that's not the way it works. You know, Swami, you can materialize vibhuti and ring and chain, but not the tail lamp of a Mercedes convertible, right? Because we feel like that. As you said, that's because of nearness that we delude ourselves and think that, you know, these things, yeah, Swami does. He does on a regular basis. He has got practice creating vibhuti and rings, but come on, the tail lamp of a Mercedes convertible is not. And you won't believe it, Prem. This is what I told my father also. I said, Dad, come on, this is not vibhuti or a ring. This is a tail lamp of a convertible. Dad said, yeah, why not? You could have told him, he would have done that. Simply, you broke your head for 4 hours in the night. If you had just told him, you would have solved the problem. And I was thinking, wow, that, as you said, those who are physically away, the faith is so much more stronger. I mean, their faith is so much more natural, it is, and they don't seem so amazed by what we feel amazed at.
Right. And in that clip, the last part which Swami was telling, you know, again, driving back to the purpose of this whole thing, because it's a surprising discourse itself. It's a landmark discourse, because the entire discourse Swami spoke about himself, and some of the statements which Swami made, I don't think you can find elsewhere. Swami is openly declaring, and Swami is saying the whole idea is maybe that sense of emergency, that such a personality is in your midst and you're missing this opportunity. you know, this is the purpose for which the avatar has come, and if you're missing this opportunity, you're the ones to lose. And I think it's almost out of that desperate love that Swami is saying. I recall another beautiful incident which one of the guests at Radio Sai had shared. You know, we have an interview with him. He's an oncologist surgeon from now I don't know where he is. He used to work in the Navy or in the Air Force or something like that. One of those Air Force. He was an Air Force surgeon. His name is Dr. Rajneesh Talwar. I think you can go up the transcript of that entire discussion is there on Radio Sai. And he, you know, narrated this very beautiful incident where he was saying that he was posted in Chennai. I think he was about 30 years old or something. And his immediate boss was Dr. Verma, who's right now the superintendent in the GH.
General Hospital.
In the General Hospital. So he was his immediate boss, and he was actually the in charge of the hospital where this person was a surgeon. And every time he would go to his chamber, he would see this picture of Swami on the table. And he would find it a little, discomforting. He would say that here is a man who is an army man, supposed to be very good at his profession and a very pragmatic person. Why should he have a photograph of another human being and worship him? So the first time he saw that, he asked, you know, who is this? So Dr. Verma told him, he's my guru. Right? So he tried to push a little further and say, you know, why are you having his picture on your table? So he said, no, you won't understand, you leave it. And he said, for the next 6 months, almost every time he would go into the chamber, he'll ask Dr. Verma, you tell me about your guru. Why do you have his picture here? You tell me something about him. And surprisingly, Dr. Verma never told him at all. You know, he would literally brush the topic aside, because probably he would have sensed that here is a very typical youngster, agnostic, and he didn't want to get into an argument with him. So almost like after 5 or 6 months of pestering, finally Dr. Verma gives him a book, which is, I think, the book written by Dr. Fani Banda. I forgot the name of the book. Divine Advent or something. One of those very famous books, one of the classics in Sai literature. So he gives him that, and he goes back and reads. So now Dr. Talwar says that, you know, a little bit of idea of Vedanta if you have, you wouldn't be so shocked by what you read in that book. Because, you know, you know the basic idea from where everybody's divine comes from, the soul and all that. He said, you know, I was a typical city-bred individual, and I was into all my habits, which an army officer is into, drinking and smoking and all the other things which go with that. So he said he was so appalled by what he was reading. He said, how can somebody be so pretentious, call himself God, and say, come and worship me and all of these things? And he was shocked by what he read. So finally, he goes up to Dr. Verma and wants to start an argument and all that. So Dr. Verma says that, see, I don't want to talk about it. If you're interested, you go and see yourself. You know, you read about it. Puttaparthi is, just a night's journey away. You go and see for yourself. So that's how he and his mother land up in Puttaparthi in the year 1992. Right? So he's sitting there, the days of the sands. He's sitting over there, and the crowd is about 5,000, 10,000 people, and the whole thing is a little repulsive for him. He said, what are all these people doing? Don't they have a mind of their own? They're coming and sitting and worshipping a man like this. And next to him is sitting a huge Englishman, a Britisher. So he's sitting, and Swami starts coming for darshan. So this Englishman pokes him and says, don't you know he is God? At least fold your hands. Right? So he's saying that he was a little, shocked by that an Englishman is teaching him the Indian manners. And so he says, all right. He puts his hand together, and Swami starts coming. And he observes this whole scene of Swami collecting letters and all that. So he turns to this Englishman and says, what are they giving Swami? You know, what are they giving this person in a white envelope? So he says, you know, people write letters and give. Sometimes it's prayers. And if Swami accepts it, it means that he has blessed the prayer that you're making. He says, all right. So suddenly the Englishman turns to him and says, why don't you write a letter to Swami? He said, no, I don't have anything to say. And before he could even say that, he's already torn a piece of paper and given it to him and given him a pen. And he says, you write a letter. He says, but I don't know what to write. He said, no, you ask whatever you want. If Swami takes it, then it means it's a blessing. So as Swami is coming, very, very interesting, he says, he writes, the first lines he writes is, if you are God, give me, he says. And then he starts thinking, what shall I ask for? Right? So he says that if Swami gives me that, then, which means Swami is God. So he stops at that, if you're God, give me, and he doesn't know what to write, because he says he didn't have any need then. you know, probably he'd want an promotion or something like that, or probably a BMW car. That's what he says, a Mercedes or a BMW car. So he's thinking of all the options. What can I ask for? Something which is worthwhile. And he sees that Swami is just about 2 minutes away from him. So he says, I need to think of something. And for some reason, without any reason that he can understand, he says, if you are God, give me peace. And he folds the letter. And he's still thinking, why did I write this? It's not that I'm not peaceful or something. And it's not that I understand anything, I have any idea of something like a higher peace. He says, why have I written this? But still he's holding it. And Swami comes by that way. He's a little far, so he's not able to give the letter to Swami. But from there, Swami looks at him and Swami smiles. Swami looks at the letter, looks at him and smiles and goes away. So he says, okay, it was a, you know, just a passing incident. So he throws away the letter, he goes away. And then he says, something starts happening after that darshan. So he says, he starts feeling like he's not walking on the ground. And some kind of happiness which he has never experienced. So he goes back to Chennai and he says, for 2 weeks, he's literally like, he's on high, you know, having taken something. He says that, I know, I've experienced all of that. So I know that this is a state which I've not got after drinking, he says, one bottle of whiskey, after smoking so many packs of cigarettes, after doing all of these things, after taking all the other substance. This is a high which I've never experienced, and nothing has lasted so long. So he's saying, what has Swami done to me? What hypnotism has he done? And you know, he's like really shocked. So after 2 weeks, the state starts coming down. And the best part is everybody around him start noticing that something has changed in him. They're saying, what happened? You're becoming so calm. What happened? You're becoming so peaceful and patient. You're not shouting at us. All his, you know, nursing staff come and tell him, what happened to you, doctor? You've become so loving and all that. Mm-hmm. So after 2 weeks, the state starts going away. So he runs back to Dr. Verma and says, I want to go back to Puttaparthi now. He says, yeah, you have the leave. You can apply for a leave and you can go. And, you know, Dr. Verma is not surprised. He's kind of feeling that he almost expected this to happen, that he'll want to go back. So this time he runs back to Puttaparthi, again sits for darshan. And then Swami comes and sits in the dais. And he says a very interesting experience occurs at this point. Where he's sitting there, he's seeing Swami. Swami sitting on the dais. I mean, we know the distance is quite a bit. And literally, he hears Swami speaking to him within him. And what he's, you know, hearing Swami speaking to him is not something which he can think of. Because it's beyond his level of understanding and thinking. And, you know, he says that. I just want to read out that part because very, very beautiful in the things which he says. Mm-hmm. He says, this is what he feels that Swami is telling him. Swami tells him, don't begin on an exercise of exploring me. I don't want you to advertise me. I can be the least affected if you call me a magician or a human. It doesn't affect me at all. What matters to me and to you is what you know about yourself and whether it enhances you or not. If you know yourself, rest assured that you will start having glimpses of me too. But even to have glimpses of me is not important. To have glimpses of yourself is most important because that is going to elevate you. And yes, the second thing is, I have put you on Mount Everest. He says, referring to that experience that he's had in the past 2 weeks. He says, I did raise your consciousness for these 15 days. Call it hypnotism, mesmerism or whatever. I have definitely raised you to the level of Mount Everest. Now, what have you come here for? You have come here to ask me to keep you there. Let me tell you that I will not do that. You will keep yourself there with your own effort now. Take me as a teacher, and a teacher is a must for you. To be a surgeon, you require a teacher. To know how to live, you require a teacher. I am the teacher, and this is what is called a guru. I will teach you how to live, how to think, how to perceive, how to talk, and how to relate yourself with others, and how to relate yourself with yourself. And that will evolve you. I have not come to teach you anything new. It's absolutely nothing new. It's just that you never tried to understand Vedanta, Quran, Bhagavad Gita and Ramayana. Even if you did try, you would require a teacher. I am the teacher who will make you understand your own religion and scriptures, and that will keep you at the level you're presently in. So this entire discussion, he says, is happening as an explanation Swami is giving him from within. And, you know, what a beautiful thing it is. You know, if you're God, you can ask for anything. There are a lot of people who say, you know, if you're God, give me this. If you're God, save my son. If you're God, you appear and protect me now. But he says that he has no idea why he asked for this prayer. If you're God, give me peace. And the way Swami answered that was something which he did not imagine ever at all. He says after that experience, he had no necessity to go back to any of those habits which he had. And he found that the peace that he felt was like a million times more than any of these things can give. And, you know, what an experience it is.
Another part of that experience which I would like to highlight is in the explanation that Swami gives him from within. It shows Swami's selflessness. You know, Swami, I don't care, I don't get the least bothered whether you call me a trickster or a magician. Because what I'm here is for you to evolve. That's all. That's all matters. Because, you know, many times, even modern gurus, they seem to have an agenda. You know, there is an agenda, and, you know, one will get worried if I make my disciple truly independent of me. If I make my disciple independent of me, then my importance goes off. Somewhere that thing possibly sits in my mind. But as Swami would say, from the tip of his hair till the tip of his toe, it is absolute selflessness. There is no need for him to even have disciples. In fact, in one Guru Purnima discourse I was reading, I don't remember which year, Swami says the true purpose of the outer guru is to connect you with your inner guru. That's all is the purpose of the guru. So, and that is what Swami revealed to him there. And in this discourse, again coming back to the 1974 discourse, Swami states the same thing. Swami says, the miracle that I perform are the kind of feeling which an elephant has when a mosquito lands on his body. You know, that is what it is. The miracle is like the mosquito on the elephant's body. These miracles have an insignificant place in my totality. Sometimes I feel like laughing at the ignorance of people when they attach importance to my miracles. People talk only of such small things and forget the much bigger aspect of me. The most sacred quality in me, which is prema. That prema is immeasurable. However much a person may try, he cannot get a measure of the extent of my prema. It is immeasurable and unrealizable. Only such people who have recognized the existence of such prema can get some idea of who and what I am. That is what Swami says in the discourse, and I think it's so clear. The only way we try to understand who Sai Baba is, who Swami is to understand the prema that he embodies and try to become part of that prema. As I said before, be like the salt doll that dissolves in that ocean. And that is the only thing that we can possibly do, which is coming close to understanding who Swami is.
And going back to that statement which Swami would often say, in fact, it's a statement which oft repeats in the Upanishads. It says, you know, the sun can be seen only in the light of the sun. Just like what Swami was telling about the sun being there, but you're not seeing it. You know, to be able to see the sun has to shine, and that's the only way you can see. And literally Swami is saying that the only way you can see Swami is through what he shines with, and that is that Swami's love. And going back to that statement which Swami would often say, he writes it in a letter to students, he says, I separated myself from myself to love myself. Indicating that love is that primary emotion. The idea of separation itself has come inspired by love. And the only way you can go back to understanding Swami is through that same emotion. No other emotion. Inquisitiveness will not get you that. Intelligence will not get you that. And all the knowledge that you can gather will not get you that. The only way to go back to that is through that love. And that's what Swami is saying, that can you see beyond this? Can you? And I recall a very beautiful episode, which I'm not going into the entire episode, which Geeta Mohan Ram narrates. And you know, we know where she comes from. She comes from the family of Seshagiri Rao. She's born into a family which is generations into devotion to Swami. So she says, you know, she had a very different childhood. She related to Swami as God nonetheless, but you know, it's not a God that you've come to discover. So you take him for granted, really, in that sense. You take all his miracles for granted. You take all that what he can do for, you know, as you're saying, that it's part of your life. It's all part of your childhood. But she says that at one point, there are two incidents she narrates. I don't recall exactly which they are, where Swami does something very miraculous. But through that incident, she realizes that the reason why Swami is doing it is it's because of his love. there was no other purpose behind that incident. And that's when, as an 8-year-old, it really hits her that, you know, we are seeing what Swami is doing, but we are missing out what is inspiring that act. And for the first time, she says that, oh God, I'm, you know, he's an incarnation of love. He's not an incarnation who can do all of these things. He's an incarnation of love. And she says the moment that understanding comes, the way she starts seeing all of Swami's actions changes completely. And I think that's really is what we, if we want to understand Swami, need to look at.
On that note, dear listeners, possibly we will conclude this discussion. Maybe I'll just quote one more small statement from that same 1974 discourse. You know, this is the thought with which we began this entire discussion of yanta matramuna evara talachina anta matrame neevu. Depending on how much we are, we estimate Swami to be, and that's why there are so many definitions of Swami. Swami says that understanding God is like trying to understand the ocean with pots. Though, depending on the pot size, the amount of water differs, you can never empty the ocean unless you become part of the ocean. So, of course, we are all small pots, big pots, clean pots, dirty pots, huge pots, tiny pots. So, depending on our different capacities, we hold different amounts of water, and depending on the cleanliness or dirtiness of the pots, that water appears like that. But as Swami again says, you know, that is what we concluded with. In order to understand love, we have to become love. In order to become love, we have to start becoming more loving in our life. Start seeing Swami in everyone that we come across, in everything that we come across. And then we'll be able to experience Swami in every point of our time. And possibly that is the Swami experience. That is the Swami we can experience alone and not understand actually. Because even having experienced it, people who have experienced it are also unable to speak about it. What about... So, I think Swami, as again we had stated in one of the previous satsangs, Swami is just the ultimate experience. It is something that has to be experienced and can never be understood. On that note, dear listeners, we will conclude this theme on who is Sai Baba. Our gratitude to the listener who sent this question, which actually triggered this satsang over four sessions. It has been beautiful for us. Hope it has been beautiful to you as well. We'll end with a song, on the other side of which you will be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment Love to Love. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
మనిషిని మాధవుని జయ మదినే స్వర్గముగా మార్చ మాధవుడే అవతరించ సత్య సాయి భగవానుగ ఎంత ప్రేమయో స్వామికి ఎంత ప్రేమయో సత్య సాయి భగవానుకి ఎంత ప్రేమయో మనిషిని మాధవుని జయ మదినే స్వర్గముగా మార్చ మాధవుడే అవతరించ సత్య సాయి భగవానుగ ఎంత ప్రేమయో స్వామికి ఎంత ప్రేమయో సత్య సాయి భగవానుకి ఎంత ప్రేమయో ఈశ్వరాంబ ముద్దు బిడ్డడై నడయాడే శ్రీనివాసుడై ఈశ్వరాంబ ముద్దు బిడ్డడై నడయాడే శ్రీనివాసుడై ఈశ్వరుడే అవతరించ ఈ పవిత్ర భారతాన ఎంత పుణ్యమో మనదెంత పుణ్యమో సత్య సాయి దర్శింప జన్మ ధన్యమో మనిషిని మాధవుని జయ మదినే స్వర్గముగా మార్చ మాధవుడే అవతరించ సత్య సాయి భగవానుగ ఎంత ప్రేమయో స్వామికి ఎంత ప్రేమయో సత్య సాయి భగవానుకి ఎంత ప్రేమయో పేర కులం పేర మత్సరాలు తగదనుచు మానవతను బోధించి ప్రేమ మతను స్థాపించా మతం పేర కులం పేర మత్సరాలు తగదంటు మానవతను బోధించి ప్రేమ మతము స్థాపించ సంభవామి యుగే యుగే అని చాటిన రీతిగా సంభవామి యుగే యుగే అని చాటిన రీతిగా అవతరించెను ఆర్త జనుల ఆదుకొనగా నీదు సన్నిధి మాకు పెన్నిధి నీదు సన్నిధి మాకు పెన్నిధి నీదు ప్రేమే మాకు ప్రాణము నీదు సన్నిధి మాకు పెన్నిధి నీదు ప్రేమే మాకు ప్రాణము తల్లి నీవే తండ్రి నీవే తల్లి నీవే తండ్రి నీవే దాతవు మా భ్రాత నీవే సాయి దేవా సర్వం నీవే సాయి దేవా సర్వం నీవే మనిషిని మాధవుని జయ మదినే స్వర్గముగా మార్చ మాధవుడే అవతరించ సత్య సాయి భగవాను ఎంత ప్రేమయో స్వామికి ఎంత ప్రేమయో సత్య సాయి భగవానికి ఎంత ప్రేమయో ఎంత ప్రేమయో స్వామికి ఎంత ప్రేమయో సత్య సాయి భగవానికి ఎంత ప్రేమయో సత్య సాయి భగవాను భగవానుకి ఎంత